Hello, this is Janet Gowan, and it's Love Letters Live. Today's guest is Shannon Weber, who's the director of HIVE, H-I-V-E, and she will explain that in a minute. She's also the founder of Love You Too, number two, loveyou2.org, which is a love note world that she's created. And so we're all tied together here between what she does at the hospital and the world of love letters. I found you on the internet somehow.
Yes.
I can't even remember. But
Alana, I remember, was somehow the connection.
That's right.
But once you found me on Facebook.
Yes.
But I don't know how you originally found me.
I don't either. But you know something? It is so worth noting that it's worth following leads.
Mm-hmm.
When something grabs your heart, just go after it, because you can just find a pot of gold like this woman is. I'm going to go to you. Would you just tell us what HIVE is?
Yes,
and HIVE. What you do at the hospital, everything about it.
So HIVE is a hub of positive sexual and reproductive health. We are formerly known as the Bay Area Perinatal Aid Center. It's a program based at San Francisco General Hospital that since 19... 19-
no, wait, a pair. Say that again.
The Bay Area Perinatal
Perinatal, okay.
Center.
Oh, yes, okay.
So based at San Francisco General Hospital and since 1989 have been caring for HIV-positive women who are pregnant. And in recent years, we've expanded our scope of work to include training and advocacy, and also to prevent primary HIV infection in women.
Okay, so how do people come to you, to the hospital? They come pregnant and happen to find out that they're HIV positive, or they know they're HIV positive when they get pregnant, or...
You know, it's a little bit of both. So now that antiretroviral therapy is so successful and people are living longer, healthier lives, many people are choosing to plan their pregnancies, which is the ideal scenario in which somebody...
who's HIV positive.
Exactly. They're living with HIV and they engage with their primary care doctor or their HIV doctor and they say, I want to have a baby.
So what does one do about not passing down the virus?
Yeah, great question. So if the woman is living with HIV, she works to make herself as healthy as possible, because the less virus that she has in her body, the less likely that she is to pass the virus on to her baby. And so
you're saying the medication actually minimizes the number of viruses?
Absolutely. Exactly. So taking antiretroviral medication reduces the number of virus that's that can be seen or is available in your blood down to an undetectable level, meaning that no virus is seen or detected in your blood. And at that level, when it's undetectable, it's a very low chance that someone would pass on the virus either to a baby or to a sexual partner. So the best thing that someone living with HIV can do, both for their own health and then also for the health of their sexual partners or family, is to take medication, engage in care, and get themselves as healthy as possible.
Okay, so I have a question about that. Of course, getting pregnant, is that safest done by artificial insemination rather than having actual physical contact with a partner to get pregnant?
So there's two different scenarios. One is where the woman is HIV positive, and the other is where the man is HIV positive. So let's talk about the woman being HIV positive first.
That would seem to be a little bit safer, because you can take sperm from a healthy man.
Exactly, and do what's called self-insemination or home insemination.
What's that?
That is where the couple at home, the man will ejaculate into a non-spermicide condom, and then with a needleless syringe, they can inject the sperm inside the woman, and she can get pregnant.
And so they have to learn how to do that, obviously.
We have a brochure. Absolutely happy to talk to people. We have a brochure. We also have a video talking about this. You want to do this at the time that the woman is most fertile, so that she's more likely to get pregnant.
Like any artificial insemination.
Exactly. And then also, because the treatment works so well, there are some couples who choose to do what's called a timed intercourse. That means having condomless sex at the time of the month when the woman is most likely to get pregnant. And because the risk is so small when someone has an undetectable viral load and there's no sexually transmitted infections in either partner, some couples will choose this option as well.
Knowing that the risk is small, but still a risk.
Yep, but very small. And you're also limiting in the exposure, because you have sex only at the time of the month in which you're most likely to get pregnant. Now, for couples where the man is HIV positive and the woman is HIV negative, in this scenario, again, the less virus that the man has in his body, the less likely he is to pass it on to the woman. And so in this setting, you really work with the couple to help them achieve pregnancy while minimizing the chance that the woman will acquire HIV either while they're trying to conceive or after she's pregnant. And so for the longest time, assisted reproductive technologies, so using sperm washing and intrauterine insemination or in vitro fertilization, were the only methods that people wanted to back up. But because of cost or location, that can be prohibitive for many couples. Mm-hmm. Now, within the last few years, we have a real true understanding that treatment as prevention works. And at the same time that this large cohort study came out showing that treatment as prevention worked, we also began to understand how pre-exposure prophylaxis works.
And what is the pre-exposure prophylaxis?
So pre-exposure prophylaxis is an HIV negative person taking HIV medications before they're exposed to HIV.
That works? Well, how do you know?
Well, there's been large clinical trials with placebo-controlled showing that it's highly effective.
Okay.
And think about this, for years...
So the placebo controls would mean that some people do get it.
The ones who did not have any of the pre-exposure prophylaxis medication in their body. And pre-exposure prophylaxis is called PrEP for short. It works when you take it, just like any other medication that you'd get prescribed by a doctor works when you take it. But think about the kind of the science behind it. We've known for years if someone gets a needle stick or has an exposure to HIV, they do what's called PEP, post-exposure prophylaxis. And they take HIV medications for 30 days after an exposure. And in fact, in the U.S., for needle sticks on the job, I think it's been over 10 years now since someone seroconverted to HIV. Hmm. So we have this growing body of evidence about the power of antiretroviral medication. We also have seen this with perinatal HIV. So we've watched for years as women who are HIV positive took medications to lower their own viral load. Some of those medications also went across the placenta, went to the baby, provided the baby protection before it was born. And so we know that it works from that also. So now we have this gift since 2012 when the FDA approved PrEP to really think about how we can best implement and support HIV negative people who might be exposed to or at risk of acquiring HIV in using PrEP.
Now, I have a kind of a further down the line question.
Mm-hmm.
When you're dealing with women who want to have babies and they go through this with you,
mm-hmm.
do you advise in any way? Are you allowed to? Do you want to not encourage them to just have a lot of babies? In other words, to put a limit on it, kind of, because if just count your blessings and don't be
mm-hmm.
greedy for more,
mm-hmm.
if you have a couple of really healthy, wonderful babies, you don't know down the line. What do you do about that?
So my way of looking at it is that we want to invite people into care. And
right.
the best way to do that is to meet them where they are. So to HIV aside, only half of pregnancies in the U.S. are planned.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we already have a problem with people engaging in care before they have babies. It's even higher among people who are impacted by HIV. So if I have the opportunity to meet someone before they get pregnant, man or woman, I want to welcome them in and
right.
say, thank you for being here. Tell me what it is that you want. Find out more about what's going on in their life. Tell me about your partner or partners. Who do you want to have the baby with? And then really trying to give them information in which they can make the choice that's
best for them.
So
this isn't part of your conversation then, this planning for how many?
I think that you want to take what we know about pregnancy aside from HIV. We know that birth spacing is good, planning
mm-hmm.
for pregnancy, all mm-hmm. of these things, and you know, help the couple have that information and make a choice that's good for
mm-hmm.
them.
And do you have an idea of how many babies a woman who's HIV positive what's like the most,
you know,
that you know about?
I have no idea.
No,
I haven't thought
curious.
About that question.
Because
it's
also
a good question.
When mother's health is always involved too. And you want to be healthy for the one baby or two babies that you
exactly.
have and not risk your own health.
Yeah, it's a good uh-huh. question, but I don't know the
okay.
answer.
Okay, so maybe that's not too relevant yet.
Hmm.
And what about, family planning, does have a part here.
It has a huge role in this, you know, HIV aside, right?
Mm-hmm.
You bring the HIV component into it and it adds another layer, both of challenge, but also of possibility for couples. You know, I see couples like this really talking with each other and making agreements about their parenting and about the life that they want to have for their child. That's really deeper and richer in some ways than other couples who may not have that challenge.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That is just a huge challenge. How many people would you say come to you a year? Or do you not know that kind of thing?
No, well, let's say, first of all, in the U.S., that the CDC estimates that there's 140,000 couples in which one has heterosexual couples, in which mm-hmm. one has HIV and one does not. And that data is quite old, from 1996. And the reality is it's probably many more, because people are living longer, healthier mm-hmm. lives now with HIV.
Yes.
So we don't have a huge sense, you know, nationwide how many it is, but it's a lot.
So parents could certainly live to see their children become adults.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's really good news, because I remember many, many years ago when parents who were HIV positive died when their children were very young, and their children were HIV positive.
Mm-hmm. Things have changed dramatically in the last decade.
Oh, that's really wonderful.
You know, the keys there are getting diagnosed early and getting and staying in care. So this is really a call for us all to get tested. You know, there still remains a lot of stigma around HIV.
A lot of fear, I guess. Yeah.
Or once you get diagnosed, the stigma and fear of engaging in care. So really, the science that we have now is an invitation for all of us to
step in.
Okay,
so you're making a nice invitation here for please get tested.
Get tested.
In comfort.
Get tested.
Without fear.
And if you are diagnosed with HIV, find a provider where you feel comfortable staying in care. This is the best thing you can do for your health, your own health. It's also the best thing you can do for any sexual partners that you will have.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. That is really, are there any particular people, of course, without names, whose stories you'd like to share that are particularly illustrative of?
Oh, God, there's so many. I think I would like to tell the story of a woman who goes by the name of Poppy Morgan, whom I met probably 8 or 9 years ago now, as she's a woman who's HIV negative. Her husband is living with HIV. He's been diagnosed and in care for over a decade, and they wanted to have a baby. And they faced many challenges. At the time, sperm washing and assisted reproductive technologies was the only method that was really supported here in California. And there was a ban on using the sperm from HIV-positive men to inseminate.
Mm.
And Poppy went and testified before the California state legislature to help overturn this ban. When that was overturned, she faced the challenge of her insurance not covering assisted reproductive technologies for her.
It does now. Or it depends.
Some do. Some insurance does and some insurance does not. So some couples, if they have that as an option, will look into that at re-enrollment and switch insurance plans so that they have that available to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are centers now in California, as well as a few others in the United States, who will work with couples who have HIV in fertility centers I'm talking about to conceive. This Poppy, she came to several dead ends. You know, providers who were not open to supporting her. At the time, we didn't have the information coming yet out of the PrEP trials, but then as it did come out and she went to ask her provider about prescribing PrEP, her provider told her no and said, in fact, if you choose to go down this path, I won't care for you.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line, it was this very long journey in which she ultimately got a provider to prescribe her PrEP before it was approved by the FDA, and she now has an HIV negative baby.
How old is that baby?
That baby's 2 years old.
Oh, okay.
So
right.
She's such an inspiration to me about what love looks like and what it's like to be a pioneer. You know, she paved a new path for women everywhere by doing this and then telling her story. She started a blog in which she posts by the name of Poppy talking about this, which really helped other women to feel like they were not alone.
That's important.
It is.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Now, I shouldn't say the transition because it's no transition. How did you come to your love note life.
The love note life.
Yes.
Well, I am a mom. I have 3 children. Mm-hmm. And when I would travel for work when my children were younger, I would leave them these little tokens. We called them jujus. Mm-hmm. That they could hold onto in their pocket or put under their pillow when I was gone, so they could have this piece of me or a reminder of our love. And one day they said to me, you know, Mom, sometimes we need a piece of you even when you are here.
Oh.
Yeah. So I created this love note that it was like a self-serve love note system. It says, I love you on the top, and I love you too on each of the pull tabs. So you could just walk by the sign and take an I love you too tab and pop it into your backpack or your pocket and have a little piece of love with you. And so this is where it all started. So from that, I began hanging those signs up places. I began painting love notes on hanging them on the fence for my kids.
Oh, all for your children.
All for my kids. Uh-huh. And then people would respond to it, and I would realize that we had this deeper connection. So myself, my kids, the universe, strangers. And as I got braver, I would start to hang the signs in other places.
Like what? Well, other places for other people.
Yeah, I would take the signs and hang them up. I started in the mission. I started hanging them on other chain link fences around San Francisco.
And what would they say, those ones?
Oh, they say, I love you. I love you too. You are enough. There's no one like you. Everything will be okay.
And how did people respond to that?
Well, at first I wouldn't know because I would only hang them up at night and sneak away. Oh. And for the longest, I didn't associate. I had a blog.
But they still had tabs so people could pull them off.
No, these painted ones, I would paint those messages, and then I'd put the website where I had a blog, and I would write about it. For the longest time, I didn't have my name associated with the blog. I wanted it to be about the serendipity and the not knowing who was behind it.
And not getting arrested for vandalism.
Well, then there's that.
Yes. So that's kind of public art in a way. You know, sometimes you see people do things like put decor around palm trees.
Absolutely. I love it.
Wonderful.
I love
it. So how has it been since? How do you?
You know, it keeps growing and taking on a life of its own all the time. I'm inspired by the interaction with strangers and friends alike around this. And so it keeps iterating into new things. So now I have little love note templates and do love note writings with schools and in public places.
Now, so you go there and you do presentations or this is all on the internet?
No, I go in person and do it. And I would say it's less presentation and more of a public art installation in which I write notes and passersby write love notes, and we create this, I call it a public display
of affection.
And
you stay there while they're passing by.
Exactly. Oh,
that's wonderful. Children really do need that. I remember when my oldest daughter was really little, and I would go out for the evening. She would sleep with my nightgown.
Oh, I
because
love
it had
this.
My scent.
Yeah, that's so beautiful.
We are a species that needs to be touched and in touch.
Yes, I love that.
Isolation. You know, you talked about even with your HIV positive Poppy, you were talking about Poppy, knowing that you're not alone. Isolation.
Absolutely.
Anywhere, it's just a killer. And I think, I don't know if you've noticed, I'm sure you have, that when you reach out to a stranger with any kind of affection, they take it as their due, which is so nice.
It is.
Nobody says, well, why me? Why do you feel that way about me? They just are open to it.
I call it.
People know they're worth loving somehow.
Absolutely. I call it in my love note world, get love, give love. This experience of taking love or getting love from somewhere, and then you have the capacity or the bandwidth then to give love somewhere else.
Oh, sure. You can only give what you own.
Yeah. So this is what the theme behind the project is. Come to that site or come to the sign and get love, and then turn around and have your own love note story.
And it's totally not doable the same way by email. Email, which I love and I'm addicted to, by the way.
Yeah.
I love it. But still, it's not the same.
It's just different form, I think.
Right.
Sometimes when you see the handwriting, you have this tangible piece of something in your hand. It is powerful.
Handwriting. It's really powerful. Well, I did a love letters workshop recently, and I took your little notes with me, and I decided I'm just going to share them. And I passed them around to this group who were doing love letters, and it is amazing how a group of grown-ups responds to this I mean, they were choosing which ones they wanted, and they knew exactly who was going to get which one, and they were so excited. And you were talking about the size of it.
Yeah, it's not intimidating because it's this quarter of a piece of paper. There's prompts on them. It's really an invitation to write. It doesn't have to be big. You don't have to make a big commitment. And you can do it for a lot of people.
And all those count as love letters. Love letters can be 3 words long.
To me, they do, yes.
I mean, they can be short, and they can be 10 pages.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on how much you can express and how much the other person can take.
True.
You know, sometimes people are not up to an enormously long outpouring of emotional feeling.
True.
But something short is easy to, like any medicine, you have to take it a little bit at a time sometimes.
I think also the short size or the small quantity of words also makes it easier to share with people that you might be in like with rather than love, for example. So, you know, a teacher, the corner store person.
Well, see, I call those love letters for sure.
Well, you know, I called it all love for a while. Then my daughter said, she's going into high school, Mom, you need a different love note pack. This is just too much for high school. You know, it's too intimidating, too much love. So then I created this, I like, good luck. Yes, you know, try to make it, again, more inclusive by not having whatever, you know, barrier people have around the word love.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. To me, in the end, it's all love.
It is. I mean, at various degrees, and there's so many different kinds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But the written expression of affection is, I mean, I said thank you notes, apologies.
Yes, so
you know,
important.
Come join. I actually, yes, and I guess adolescents can be a little skittish.
Mm-hmm.
But
and also in life, later in life, if you've been hurt, you know, you have to dip your toe in.
Mm-hmm.
You have to practice. And I think that's what these are too. It's like, you can practice, you can start small.
That's very nice. And get used to writing down the affection. And
exactly.
Because then people have that forever.
Yep.
By the way, once they have it.
Yes.
I'm guessing that people keep these because my own experience is that people keep love letters in boxes once people pass on and the children go into the house, they find boxes stuffed under the sink and in the backs of closets and they've got love letters and notes.
It's so true. I save all the ones we write at public events. I have thousands of them now.
Yes. Oh, that's wonderful. What do you just have them collected for your own joy?
Well, I have them collected and right now I curated a selection of them and they're hanging in the window at 826 Valencia. So I also have fantasies that they'll become other, you know, art installations in different places. Because for me, part of this project also is the power of being witnessed. You know,
say more about that.
So that someone will see what you wrote.
Uh-huh.
And also, what's it like for the person who's witnessing to take in that story? So I really saw this happen during this 826 Valencia window display in which people... I left a mailbox in 826 Valencia for people to write more notes, and then I've been switching them out during the installation. And people shared profound and beautiful sorrow and hope at the same time. And as I would hang them in the window, I would think, you know, this deserves to be witnessed, to be seen by other people, so it can also be sent on its way, in whichever way that is.
Being sent on its way. I like that. Well, tell me about, I see that you've got a piece of paper there with a note.
I do.
And tell us about that.
So I wrote a love note.
To?
I wrote a love note to Poppy's daughter, Macy.
Oh, and is Poppy still alive?
Oh, yes.
Oh, good. Okay. So it just happens to,
Yeah. Well, I know, Poppy is, you know, is very close to my age and her daughter's 2 years old now.
Oh, that's right. You said that, of course. Yes.
And I wrote this letter because, well, I have a whole thing for babies and kids, as is apparently clear. And so I wanted to write a letter to Macy, who's her 2-year-old daughter.
Okay, let's hear it. Thank you.
It says, "Dear 2-year-old Macy, you are here because your mom is full of love. She is brave. She is a pioneer. She follows her heart. Of all the people in the world, I've not known someone to have been born so wanted, so planned for, and so desired. If all babies could be this lucky. We have worked hard to create a world where you can love whomever you choose, where you can decide when and how you want to have sex, and where you can choose when and with whom you'll have children or not. There's much more to be done, but Macy, we have been waiting for you. With love, Shannon."
Mm. Okay, so when I swallow the lump in my throat, we can go right ahead and talk a little more. So you will send this in your handwriting to Shannon.
To
Macy.
Yeah.
To Shannon. To Macy. And you'll address it to her.
Mm-hmm.
And then Poppy will leave it there till she's old enough to open it and read it.
I guess so. I'm sure
so.
She will.
That's a wonderful thing to write to young children. I've done that also, and I encourage it.
I think there's great hope for this next generation.
Well, it's also historically relevant.
It is.
You know,
can you imagine? Hopefully when she is 16 or 18 or 20 and reads this, she'll say, oh, can you only imagine?
What was she talking about?
Exactly.
Yeah, so primitive.
Exactly. This is my hope.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And she'll know that she holds a really significant place in the history of mankind.
Exactly. Can you imagine all this energy that has gone towards her and being born and like what a place of possibility that is now?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to say, which we're talking about anyway, but I want to just specify it, that any love letter you write, a memory, a hope, anything at all, your truth put to paper in the most compassionate, loving way, is your history documented in your own hand.
That's true.
I do want to say, and I'm sure you realize this, good, strong paper and really indelible good ink, because things fade.
Good point.
And I actually had this happen. It was horrifying. A child opened an envelope at the age of 10, and there was nothing on the paper.
Well, that's...
It had faded. I mean, that was just really sad.
That is
sad. Okay.
So maybe I'll go rewrite this with Super.
keep it, and then you keep this as a copy. But yes, is this ink?
Yeah.
Well, that'll do it.
I think it will do.
Oh, yes. That looks like good ink. Okay. So, yes, you just don't want something, you know, some washable ink out of a fountain
correct.
Pen. Which, okay. So that's wonderful. Will you make a copy of this to keep for yourself? Or do you not believe in that sort of thing?
I don't know that I need to.
Okay.
I may, but I don't know that I need to. I think that's a piece of my love note project is that it can disappear and it can go away. There's something about that release for me. And I think that's a part of my hanging sign on fences. I don't know what will happen to them.
Okay.
Writing love notes and leaving them wherever I go is that also, I don't know that I need to have it.
Okay. So I understand that point of view. And there's also the feeling that if it's somebody you write a lot of love notes to, you might want to keep it so you know what you've already said.
Oh yeah. It's kind of a chronicle of your story together too.
And not that it matters. You know, you can say the same thing over and over again. You may bore your children a little bit, but they'll be happy when they're older. Okay. Thank you so much for doing this with me.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for being a love note writer.
Oh, ditto. Ditto.
It's so inspiring to find your people in the world. I'm so glad that you found me.
And you know something? There are so many of us.
I love
everywhere,
knowing this.
Everywhere you turn.
It's a revolution, I've decided.
Well, you know, I don't know whether it's that. I spent so long hearing about the lost art of love letters. And that sounded reasonable to me, because we have all these methods of communicating. And then I realized one day, what? It's not lost at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just in the hands of fewer of us.
Mm.
But people still do it, and they love it. I did a workshop with a group of five-year-olds with a kindergarten class one day.
Awesome.
And I don't know that they'd ever seen a pen and a piece of stationery. They went nuts.
Awesome.
Some of those children wrote four letters in the space of an hour. They were small.
I love it.
And
it's beautiful.
Yeah, it was astounding. People really want to do it. I think we know that putting our handwriting down and a date has the force of a contract. It's an I love you that lasts forever.
It's true.
Thank you, darling. This
Thank
is great.
You.
I hope we'll see each other lots
more
and do other things together.
There will be more.
So until next time, I don't even think I have to remind you anymore, but I like saying it, that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion, and it's more than that. It's a way of life that is so delicious that I hope you jump in and try it. Thank you. This is Janet Gallen saying goodbye. And
Shannon Weber.
Thank you, dear. Next time. Bye.